We of the Republic sense the truth that democratic government has innate capacity to protect its people against disasters once considered inevitable, to solve problems once considered unsolvable. We would not admit that we could not find a way to master economic epidemics. Just as after centuries of fatalistic suffering, we had found a way to master epidemics of disease, we refuse to believe. We refuse to leave the problems of our common welfare to be solved by the winds of chance.
All American presidents are commanders-in-chief by law. Not all have performed as such in practice. In his new book, Roosevelt Centurions, distinguished historian Joseph Persico reveals how, during World War II, Franklin Roosevelt seized the levers of wartime power like no president since Abraham Lincoln during the Civil War.
Now, you know, I love Joe Persico. Prior to the beginning of his career as a historian and biographer, Joseph Persico was chief speechwriter for New York Governor and later U.S. Vice President Nelson A. Rockefeller. He has written 13 books, including many about FDR and the Roosevelt era, including Roosevelt's Secret War, FDR and World War II Espionage, and Franklin and Lucy, FDR and the Remarkable Women in His Life.
Now his 13th book, Roosevelt's Centurions, I show you on the radio, FDR and the commanders he led to victory in World War II. It is just out, and we are thrilled to have him join us here in Hyde Park. Thank you very much for being with us, sir. What an honor to have you.
Always, it's always great for me to be back to Hyde Park.
Well, first of all, let me just say, we'll talk a little bit about the book, but you and Alan did one of the best interviews I've ever heard, the two of you talking about this book and about your work, and it's available online, and if people haven't heard it yet, they really should. It was absolutely phenomenal, so just keep that in mind.
Well, thanks to Alan's gifts as an interrogator.
Well, we were down here last time, and Joe told me about how he was going to write this book. And I said, I want to be first on the read list, and was. And we had him on the radio for an hour, and he was great. I just finished, or almost finished, the Winston Churchill book by Manchester. And I'm fascinated by how these two guys were issuing military orders at the same time, and sometimes in conflict with each other. Churchill had views on the war which were not shared by Roosevelt, but Roosevelt was far more canny in getting what he wanted, wasn't he?
Well, in the beginning, Roosevelt behaved as somewhat of a junior partner with Winston Churchill, because Churchill had much more experience militarily. He graduated from there, West Point, Sandhurst. He'd been twice First Lord of the Admiralty. He had been a leader of a nation 2 years before we got in. But as the war progressed and the American military expanded explosively and the American industrial output was a cornucopia, planes, ships, tanks, etc., Franklin Roosevelt became the senior partner.
And also, you know, Roosevelt had all those boots on the ground early, as you just mentioned. And so he had a little bit more to say about it.
Well, there was some concern initially as to who was to lead the liberation of Europe, D-Day, Normandy, etc. And first it was thought to be the British because they were the closest. But we, as you say, Alan, we had so many boots on the ground, practically sinking southern England, that the job went to Dwight Eisenhower.
It is, you mentioned at the very beginning of being, how great it is to be back in Hyde Park. You have spent a lot of time here in your research on three books, ultimately, on Roosevelt.
That's right.
And so what is that process like for you? Because it's all in, I would assume at some point, it's narrowing down and fine-tuning as to what you're looking for.
Well, also, unfailingly, Joe, it's always been an emotional experience for me. You know, I grew up during the Roosevelt years. He was the only president I knew until he died in 1945. So then when I find myself writing my first book about FDR and coming down here, it almost sent a shiver through me to be in the archives, having in my hands documents with that bold scrawl of FDR's. Mm. And that sense of having history just ooze out of the wall here has never left me through three books.
What do you know about the library's origins that we don't?
Well, we get back to this relationship between Franklin and Margaret Daisy Sukley. Margaret Daisy Sukley was FDR's distant cousin, and she just lived up the road here at Wilderstein. She is a fellow member of the Hudson River aristocracy and distantly related to FDR. And they become very, very close. I think she adored Franklin, and he just felt a great deal of trust with her because she was of a class that he could tell her whatever he wanted and knew that it would be safeguarded. Now, at one point, Roosevelt, having a sense of destiny, knowing he's going to be a historic figure, decides towards the end of his second term that he wants to build this library, the first presidential library in the country. So it begins on a very modest scale with him passing papers from the White House here to the home here in Hyde Park, and Daisy's there all by herself, and she's sorting these things and cataloging these things. And this grows and grows and grows into the library where we are today. One little interesting footnote. Daisy Sukley assumed that at the end of his third term that Roosevelt would retire and that she would spend more time with him during the day at the library and the rest of the time up at his private getaway, Stone Cottage, just up a hill from here.
So you saw the movie?
I did. I thought it was amusing. I didn't take it very seriously.
There's no question as in terms of what you just said that there was some intimacy between the two of them.
Well, he was very fond of her, and she just adored Franklin Roosevelt.
I wasn't talking about that kind of intimacy.
Would you be more explicit?
With keeping the FCC license, so let's just keep it at that.
Well, let's never forget that Franklin Roosevelt was a man who was paraplegic. What his capacities were in every department, we can't be sure. And as I pointed out in my book, Franklin and Lucy, where there was real intimacy before he was stricken by polio, that what people do behind closed doors, what they do is not inside of a fishbowl, so we'll never know. Is that the nature of the intimacy that you were asking about, Alan?
Pretty much.
But, you know, and yes, that is an unbelievable story. And as you say, you wrote about FDR and Lucy Mercer Rutherford. But you also uncovered some other stories besides the affair stuff. You uncovered some amazing stories about her and her background.
Well, the most rewarding was this. In the course of writing Franklin and Lucy, which dealt with the significant women in his life, his wife Eleanor, his mother Sarah Delano Roosevelt, his daughter, and friends of his who were female companions, I had gone down to the Rutherford estate in South Carolina, Aiken, South Carolina, to interview the granddaughters of Lucy Mercer Rutherford. I went down there and went to their home and talked to these two gals, sisters. Not particularly rewarding interview because their memories of their grandmother were very dim and distant. But as I was leaving their home, just going out the door, one of them said to me, "Would you be interested in letters?" "What letters?" They said, "Letters from President Roosevelt to our grandmother." Well, historians dream of situations like that. And the hairs went back up on my neck.
That's a good day.
And I said to them, "Would you let me see the letters?" And they let me see the letters. I said, "Would you let me copy the letters?" And they let me copy the letters, and I used them in the course of writing the book. But afterward, I said to them, "You know, that this is a great historic treasure trove. And it shouldn't be in a drawer here in your home. It should be in the Roosevelt Library in Hyde Park." And we worked on that for a number of years, and I'm happy to say that those letters are here now.
Wow, that is incredible.
What did they say?
Well, I hate to disappoint our audience, but they were not steamy love letters. They were chatty letters between people who had once been very close, but who had continued a very warm relationship afterwards.
Kind of like the holiday letter of "This is what I did last year"?
A little better.
Okay, good. That's good.
And then there was no sense that this was really code.
Well, it's hard to say because there were some intimations in there that Franklin Roosevelt, in these letters that he wrote to Lucy, and this is before he became president, that I am going to be at Hyde Park on such and such a date. I'm going to be here on such and such a date. So we can only conjecture.
Yeah. When you think of what is on display here and this incredible what they've done to the museum, you said that you were particularly struck by the car that is still in the basement, the
right.
Ford
yeah.
that he drove around
yeah.
and apparently was just a yeah. nut behind the yeah. wheel.
Well, there's an interesting story behind that manually operated car. Winston Churchill made his second visit to the States during World War II.
You tell that story in this book. It's an amazing story.
May I repeat it?
Absolutely. I don't want to interrupt you. I just wanted people to know that if they wanted a transcript, they could find it in your book.
Exactly. Well, anyway, Churchill flew up in a little moth-like plane. He landed right out here at Hyde Park. And as he comes to a stop on the grass greenway runway, there's FDR and his Ford, the very car that you see here at the museum. FDR waves him into the car and takes off breakneck speed and tells Winston Churchill, "We have to shake my Secret Service guard so I can show you my estate." So they start whizzing around these hairpin curves that make up the estate. And Churchill is very, very concerned. He's very, I won't say frightened, but he's uncomfortable. And Roosevelt, "So don't worry, Winston. Just feel my right bicep," he said. "I can handle this car." He said, "This is a bicep that was envied by a world heavyweight champion boxer." And I think he meant Gene Tunney at that point. But there's another little interesting history behind that car. FDR, surprisingly, had a great deal of mechanical aptitude. And well before he was president, he was visiting in Warm Springs. And because of his paraplegic state, felt very isolated. And he bought for $50 a used Model T Ford. And he made some designs which he thought would produce a manually operated car, which was virtually unheard of then. He gave these designs to a local car mechanic in Warm Springs who produced a car that could be run by your hands. And that was the forebearer of the car that we see here today.
With a cigarette holder in it.
Probably.
Yeah, I mean that's amazing of having the yeah. cigarettes right there on the to the left of the steering wheel.
I wanted to, of course, are a great biographer not only of FDR but of Rockefeller and a writer on Rockefeller. You worked for Rockefeller. When you look at these two men of just such power, do you ever make comparisons yourself?
Well, I think there are some parallels. For one thing, Nelson Rockefeller worked for Franklin Roosevelt.
Sure.
During World War II, he was the coordinator of inter-American affairs, which was that he handled Latin American countries, tried to keep them behind the Allies throughout the war, and he did this for Franklin Roosevelt. And I think that Rockefeller was a keen student of how FDR managed his administration. And when I was working for the governor, you saw parallels. For example, Roosevelt didn't give a darn about organization charts, lines of responsibility. As one of his aides said, he would give six jobs to the same man and then give six men the same job, which was the kind of way that Rockefeller operated. When he wanted somebody, the existing arrangements of the departments meant nothing. He'd started his own temporary commission or whatever. So they were very similar in that respect. And also, they were similar in this sense. Both men came from what you might call an American aristocracy, yet had the common touch.
Mm.
Joe Persico's new book is Roosevelt Centurions, FDR and the Commanders He Led to Victory in World War II. It is published by Random House. Joe Persico, I can't believe how the time flies, but I thank you so much for making the trek and being with us and sharing your experiences and remembrances. It means so much to us.
My pleasure.
Thank you very much. Joe Persico, everybody. You're listening to the Roundtable's live broadcast on WAMC.